Namaste and in La Ketch, and welcome to this episode of One World in a New World. I'm your host, Zen Benefiel, and this week's guest is Michael Paterano. Now, Michael's a very interesting, unique character in my discovery of folks through LinkedIn and elsewhere. His profile, basically, I generally use profiles to introduce them, and his is quite unique. He simply says, I am a multifaceted, multidimensional spiritual being living a human experience that expands depth and breaks ceilings. So there's a little bit more that kind of follows up with that. He says, I am the living example of growing forward from all extremes to inner balance while living into my definitive purpose. Now, wouldn't we be well off to do that too? Michael, glad to have you here.
Glad to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I have a feeling
that that's an interesting question, right? Wouldn't we all be better off? I mean, I don't like generalizations and I don't like bucketing people, but as a whole, if we grew through our experiences rather than went through or go through, and we grew through them, acknowledged a growth, and understand that we are in a perpetual state of growth, no matter what we're doing.
Right.
Then we would look at ourselves in a completely different way.
Absolutely.
And our acknowledgement and self-appreciation would go through the roof, and self-love and self-worth.
Sure.
But that it goes against.
And that's a discovery process. So speaking of discovery, right, when I talk to my guests, it's like we want to explore this inner world because we're bereft of understanding it, let alone acting in it or sharing it with others because for fear that we're going to be deemed crazy. Right. And in the past, that was so. I experienced it. I'm sure you did too. Now that we're a bit older, we can look back and say, it wasn't that bad. And yet, there are ways to share that now with our generation and those coming so that there is less dysfunction in the process of developing that self-love you just mentioned. So how did you first get in touch with this inner awareness with you, and what was that like, and what was going on, and what was your constraints from others, or if there were any?
So, I mean, I have to give a little bit of backstory, right? I was adopted at birth. I was adopted at birth, and my adopted mother, God rest her soul, had lots of generational trauma that was back then in the late 70s, early 80s, wasn't really a thing. Mm-hmm. And she emotionally and mentally and physically abused me for years. So my first near-death experience, I was 3.5, 4 years old. That's when my spirituality came to light within myself. Mm-hmm. It was that first near-death experience, and I came back with all my clear gifts present and available to me. But I was still under the umbrella of being abused. So I was
right. And as a kid, it's hard to figure out really what's going on because you're in conflict inside, right?
Well, that was it, right? It made the extremes so much greater.
Yeah.
Because on the spiritual side, you have these gifts, and your spiritual guides are telling you you're here for this purpose, you're here to do amazing things, you're here to live into this, you're here to be a living example, you're here to show others. And on the human side, I'm getting the shit kicked out of me and emotionally destroyed on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So it was like, it was quite the paradigm. And I started drinking at 9 and doing hardcore drugs at 12. And it was really a death wish. I had a death wish for 20 years. I didn't want to exist. That paradigm was too big. The paradox that my life was at that moment. That's why I say going from extremes to finding inner peace. Because I tested those extremes to every limit humanly possible.
Mm-hmm.
I OD'd 7 different times. I mean, I've had 16 near-death experiences now. And it was really trying to get out.
And they still didn't want to let you go.
No.
And it's like, no, dude.
It was more like, you're going back. You're going back. And so that was the process. And every time I did, it was learning something deeper about myself. Hmm. Now, in hindsight, because hindsight is so crystal clear, you know, the journey, spirituality to me is the journey of self-understanding. Sure. And that's really as simple as it can get in the most plausible way for it to be readily available to anyone on this planet. people want to make it evil. They want to make it bad because they don't understand it. So the thing is, as humans by nature, we have an average of 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day. Mm-hmm. Up to 95% of them are subconscious auto-programming, and up to 85% of them are negative.
You're self-deprecating, right?
Right. So up to 85% of them are negative. So at the end of the day, our mind is against us. Because I look at our mind as the veil between us and our higher power, whatever you want to call it, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Just acknowledge that it's there, right? And I look at our mind as the veil between the two. It is our identifier to our higher power. It is in self-preservation mode. It all it wants to do is exist.
Yeah.
So and that's why people say team. You're right. So that's why people say ego is bad. To me, it's the balance. When you learn how to alchemize your ego and your spirituality is when you hit self-mastery on some level,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't believe in mastery. I believe that we're here just to continuously grow.
There's the combination, right? I mentioned the inner and the outer earlier. So there's on the inner, there's self-realization. That's the self-love. On the mm-hmm. outer, there's self-actualization, which is the outer love that appears in your, I call it a perfected form, fit, and function in the world, right? And that's kind of heady, but that basically it leads you in flow to whatever it is that you're here to do.
Exactly.
At whatever time you're here to do it, because it is a progression, right?
Well, it's not only that. I mean, as human beings, we like to control time, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's time was created to control us, and now in turn, we've spent millennia trying to control time. And the reality is, you can't control divine time. It's divine for a reason. So
it is, you know, and yet, the interesting thing. I'm going to throw this in here because you mentioned time. I'm curious. You know, time's always been because there's these moments of time dilation that we experience, mm-hmm. right? Why is that? There's it's called the New Science. It's memoirs of the scientist that ran Project Magnet in Canada in the 1950s, which was equal to the U.S. Project Blue Book at the time. And mm-hmm. he actually had memoirs that he had, writings, if you will, that of conversations that he had with what he called people from elsewhere. And mm-hmm. among the things that they told him, one that really stood out was our concept of time is a bit contrary. Mm-hmm. Their concept is it that time is actually a measurement in the change of entropy. So as you figure out the order from the chaos, time just kind of disappears because you're in flow, right? Everything's right. in harmony. You've got all the time you need to take care of what you need to with others because there's no constraints in place at that point. Now, that's a really deeply disciplined place to live in, let alone, you know, discover on in process, right? Like, and we're still in it, right? You and I have had and adopted as well myself mm-hmm. at birth, or not at birth, but 6 weeks later. And fortunately, I didn't have the trauma-filled environment you did, which gave you a gift.
Mm-hmm. Right? 100%.
My gift was still the separation intellectually and spiritually from my parents, even though, you know, dad was a 32nd degree Mason, mom was an English teacher in junior high. So I got this really rich experience, and yet I couldn't talk to them about my inner experiences still. And
right.
yet there was that ability to explore and develop the voice and learn how to communicate and get through all of those, I don't want to say fear-based, but definitely constraining thoughts that were usually projected. And mm-hmm. then my trauma came in, you know, later years when I was 19, that I had my spiritual awakening. And said, well, wait a minute, we think you need to kind of take a break for a little bit. And they institutionalized me a year later. Like even that doc, it, you know, labeled me, drugged me. And it wasn't until I told him what he wanted to hear that I all of a sudden had a miracle cure. Well, why is that? Why couldn't you listen to what I was trying to say and at least try to understand?
They don't want to understand.
This is the mental health field, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not that deep. We need an emotional health field.
or no fields and just live in
exactly.
Or just live in limitlessness, right? And look at a
whole. We need to live in the field, you know, according to Lynn McKay.
Right. It's enjoying. It's experiencing the experience, right? And it has all levels.
Yeah. So going back to that, as your kid, the things that you noticed as an adult that were key factors in helping you navigate, even though you had those moments where you wanted to just leave. Once that took place, it was like, okay, I'm back here again. What do I need to do? What were those? What did you find when you questioned it in that way?
I mean, it was always shown to me, right? Like, I'm here to elevate humanity through knowledge and understanding. So it was always shown to me. Like, from the very first, very beginning, it was shown to me. My perception of it as I evolved and as I grew and as I started healing have shifted, right? Because it's all about our perception. 8.1 billion perceptions are all accurate. Mm-hmm. 8.1 billion truths are all accurate. Because everybody has their own perception, their own world, their own perception of the world, which is why people say everybody lives in their own world. And it's true, because we have our own perception of it. Right. One person says it's blue, one person says it's violet, one person says it's red, one person says it's gray because they're colorblind. They're all telling the truth. They're looking from their perspective.
Right.
So to me, it's the depth of understanding. And that's the spiritual journey, that's the life journey, that's the what we're here for, is to understand. But until we go inward and understand ourselves, we can't possibly understand others.
What do you think keeps us from going inward? You know, because it's obvious there's something there, because if there wasn't,
mm-hmm.
there wouldn't be so many going, well, you know, nuts right now, especially after COVID, right? We were talking about this previously, that there's this mm-hmm. massive fear-based consciousness that just seems so, traumatized.
So there's societal and cultural differences, right? A lot of culture, lower class cultures are raised to be hyper independent. A lot of upper middle higher class cultures are raised to be very codependent. So you have everybody bumping into each other with these extremes,
right?
And
not recognizing what interdependence might be.
Right? Well, right. That's not discussed anywhere. That's not talked about anywhere. Wholeness, oneness. Our value, our self-worth, our self-love, not discussed anywhere. These are the only things that should be taught in school. You shouldn't learn anything but those things. Right. Because the rest you figure it out as you go anyway.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. I had experience teaching high school. And one of those years was teaching self-contained special ed. You know, the kids that were just out of control and on meds and all that kind of stuff. Well, after my stint, charter school, district schools, residential treatment center school, even I saw what was missing and wrote a business plan for a holistic educational school slash village.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than just the school. It has to be interconnected because the village does raise the kid. Well, we've heard this. We talk about it. Even Hillary mentioned it, right? And yet we don't know how. And
we know how. We don't want to.
Well, I wrote the plan. I presented it to the director of their Arizona Child Protective Services educational program.
They don't care.
She said, Jen, I love it. You're light years ahead of us. I don't know if we'll ever get there. Well, that gave me two things. It gave me hope, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he saw the value. And it also gave me despair.
Right, because it was ripped right away again.
Yeah.
It was ripped out from under. The reality is, as much as people dislike the system, they don't know how to operate without it. Mm-hmm. They don't want to lose what's currently in place because they don't know what's possible.
Yeah.
The system currently stands from education to raising kids to all these different things. It's they take away creativity. They take away creative thinking, problem solving. And
well, they drug the kids. They say, oh, you got ADHD. We're going to give you Adderall, right?
Yeah, they try to. Yeah.
Now, I've been thinking about this for a while, and I'll posit it to you. And is it possible that this shift in the way children learn and act mm-hmm. today, and even some adults, right? Mm-hmm. There are those
Me.
Adults.
I'm one.
Me too. And yet, when you think about the evolution of humanity and the progression and the speed and now the technology and looking at it from a holistic standpoint, right?
Mm-hmm.
how would the human race be adapted, if you will, to meet the requirements of the future that we're building? Well, you know, there's the cosmic side of we're in a different area of space. The vibratory range is slightly different. And so there's a subtle effect that trickles through. And then there's also, here's what we need to do in order to keep up, right? So there's, mm-hmm. and this is the nature of an animal species. We adapt.
In theory. In theory, we adapt.
And so I would posit that what we're seeing in this barrage of neurodiversity, I'll just put it that way, that these are actually healthy things that those who lived in the old paradigm don't know how to handle because they're not built to do so.
Right.
However, we still have to be curious enough to ask the question, why is this happening? And it doesn't have anything to do, in my opinion, it might have something to do with vaccines, as many are proposing, but my guess is it probably doesn't. That may be a factor.
It's evolution.
Factors. Right.
It's evolution.
So what do you suggest, or how have you dealt with this neurodiversity in yourself, in your life with others?
So I take the time to understand, first of all, right? I take the time to understand myself, understand what works best for me, that I'm audiological and that listening is how I absorb information. Mm-hmm. So then I become very careful about what I listen to. I don't watch news. I don't watch politics. I don't watch those things.
Mm-hmm.
I can read it online, but I don't listen to it because I'm audiological and that's what will be burnt into my memory.
Right.
So I'm very conscious. I don't listen to pop music. I don't listen to really music at all. I listen to frequencies. So I'm very intentional about what I allow in my mind because that is the gateway again, as we discussed, the gateway between us and our higher powers. So I look to alchemize that at all times. Is it perfect? No, I have three young kids. Nothing's perfect, but that's the perfection, right? The perfection is in the imperfection.
I exactly. also believe that. Well, and being present to allow it to be.
100%. That's flow. I love it. It's amazing. Like that my kids are on the last 4 days. Yesterday we had snow. So they had a snow day and now today it's like zero out. So it's like, you know, it's this whole, and then started late at school today because, you know, you just got to live with it. You got to do what you got to do and just let it all be okay. To release these constraints and these pressures that we put upon ourselves. We allow these external pressures to beat us down. And that's why strokes are probably at an all-time high. Well, the medical system doesn't help, but that's a whole different story. And, you know, that's why all these things are at such all-time highs, because these external pressures that we then internalize and we make them more important than they have to be. I believe that 100%, of the population is neurodivergent. You know what that tells me? That there is 8.1 billion individuals.
Absolutely.
The problem is the cattle herding mentality to create factory workers in the 1860s that we call our education system has not changed since.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not reaching the 8.1 billion different versions of individuals.
Well, it's, we reaching just recently the became a global society. Not that I'm looking for excuses, right?
Right.
Or I think forgiveness probably is the even 100%. Better way. You know, we just haven't. We are in process. I don't want to say we haven't, because this is all new. This is a new living awareness that many people are opening up to. You and I have been privileged because from our youth. So to others, we look really wacky, right? Because of how we speak and act and behave. And yet it is extremely disciplined. We still have fun. We still enjoy. We still do the wild, weird, wacky stuff. And yet, what you were talking about with the mind management, we're able to just be in that place. How did you find the accelerated version of yourself once you found flow?
I don't think I've found it. I think I'm still in the process of growing into it. I feel like it's an ever evolving process. I feel like my ascension is the day I die, right? Because I ascend into a different version of my energy form.
Sure.
I'm not.
Well, I wasn't necessarily talking about ascension. I get that.
But I'm being realistic with the same capacity of hitting this peak. I don't believe there's a peak during life. I believe we just keep evolving on a daily basis until we get where we're at.
My question was more on, you know, we have moments of accelerated growth curves.
Mm-hmm.
So I was asking more as to, you know, what have you found are the triggers for those?
The biggest perceived failures, the biggest perceived setbacks, the biggest perceived losses, the biggest perceived pains, the greatest adversities. Okay. Is what has triggered those for me. Now, maybe I'm just a masochist, and that's what it takes to motivate me to get me into that accelerated flow state.
Again, we like to beat up on ourselves, right?
Right. I'm not sure. But what I can tell you is I've been in flow now for a year since my stroke nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
The first part of it was literally just healing for the first 10 months.
So the stroke, my wife had one as well in 2008, the long time before I met her, and she was pretty much fully recovered by the time I met her. However, that's like the universe saying, full stop,
mm-hmm.
You need to redirect.
100%.
So what was it like just previous to your stroke?
Chaos.
And just post?
Absolute chaos. My son died, my father died 3 months earlier. I was in all sorts of financial issues, all sorts of stuff happening from traveling back and forth, helping my father. All these different things were just chaos. Mm-hmm. I was fighting for my son's rights in his school. That was finally getting settled. My ex and her family started coming down on me hardcore. My family was coming down on me hardcore. There was so much external internalization that it was crippling. And I believe that it was an internal popping point. Also, the download that I received through this stroke was the most powerful thing I've ever received. So all around, it was the greatest gift I've ever had. I call it my stroke of gratitude.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there was no swing and a miss on that one.
No, it was a triple stroke, major stroke. 86% chance I'd be a vegetable for the rest of my life, and it happened while I was driving. So.
Luckily, you survived after that. Yeah, because you know.
Well, my son was in a car with me. I was pulling up to a red light, and I looked at him, and I said, Thomas, I don't feel right. He said, are you going to be okay? And I said, I don't know. And he said, I passed out. My eyes rolled to the back of my head. Light turned green. 30 seconds later, he tapped me on the shoulder, said, that's the light screen. You got to drive home. I opened my eyes and drove home. That was it.
Hmm.
Came back to the house, put on few frequencies, and went into healing stasis and meditation for the rest of the day, sleeping off and on through the healing stasis, psychic surgery. Then the next day, I went to the hospital.
Yeah.
And they didn't even believe I had a stroke, even though I was slurring and half my body was paralyzed for the first 6 weeks.
Modern medicine, right? So the gift that you got, the download, what was the essence of it that gave you the insight, understanding, and passion to continue?
To move into my authenticity no matter what. To share my story, to create a program around my healing journey and make it one of the 8.1 billion perspectives out there. But as long as it was relatable to those that it related to, it gave them a path to be able to find their own version of healing.
Sure.
Mind, body, and soul, triple level. And released a book, put the book out. Once I was able to be that had my spark back to write, because it took me 8 to 10 months to write after that. Not physically write, but to be able to flow and be clear.
It's enough to me.
It took me a while. I mean, I wrote my whole book on my phone. So, like, cool. I just typed it all on my phone, the whole book on my phone, the whole program, everything. Now the corporate program that's coming from it is I've been doing it all on my phone also. I don't use my laptop.
That's fascinating me, because the device is too small for me. I like something a little more, you know, I'm more of a touchy-feely kind of guy.
This is the future of the world.
What we don't understand is
it is the greatest tool, which we can either choose to be a weapon or an asset.
Mm-hmm.
Social media isn't the issue. It's the broken human looking to avoid themselves through social media that is the issue. I love Instagram, but my Instagram is curated to what I allow in my space.
Right.
Most people don't have that. I barely have any family on there. I barely have any friends on there. I follow people that I appreciate their journey. I want to understand their journey at all different levels, further on their journey than I'm on my journey. Because again, we're all on our own individual path. There is no ahead or behind.
Right.
It's impossible. We're on our individual path. So we're 8.1 billion individuals on individual paths living interdependently. But these are words that they don't teach us in school, because interdependence doesn't fuel consumerism, doesn't fuel Hallmark holidays, doesn't fuel the guilt, the shame, the blame that we all find ourselves living in, which is how we fund the current economy and how we fund the current financial system, why we have comparison, why we always need to catch up with everyone else, why we have to work for 50 years to then relax for 10 and then die, why all these systems that have been created to restrain us while the few that slip through the cracks move right then into the top, upper echelon of the same system. None of the ones that have slipped through the cracks have yet to change the system. They're terrified to lose what they have.
Sure. Now, do you see in this, I'll just use the word ascension as you did earlier, because we're in that. It feels like a raising of consciousness.
Expansion. We're in an expansion phase.
Expansion, raising. You know, there are these groups and folks that think, oh, we're on the fringe, right? That we're, because these are the early explorers. They're thinking, oh, well, you know, there's Nibiru going to be showing up. There's all kinds of different things. We're going to be, the Earth's going to be splitting and the 5D Earth's going to go. And what it really seems to me, on a very simple level, it's the physical world's not going to change. It's how we interact with it that will. And the existing systems aren't necessarily broken. They're just mismanaged. So what we
need to be retuned
is buck up and you know, participate in the world instead of, you know, keeping ourselves
existing,
clustered and secure.
Right.
Theoretically.
But we're suppressed through fear. You have to fit in. You have to be like everyone else. You have to go to high school, find your sweetheart, get married, buy a house, have kids, get two cars. You're $1 million in debt. You're
work, right?
$1 million in debt, working the next 30 years just to pay off a house loan. And then when you retire, you have no purpose in your life, and you die within 5 years, and your kids pass the house down or sell the house or do whatever they want.
Sure.
But it's absurd. Like, what life is? What kind of life is that? That's not living life.
And yet, you know, I did it too. I moved to Arizona, started in the aerospace industry, was married, had 4 kids, was working to be the best father, husband, going to school to finish my degree, active in the church as an elder. And in pretty much 3 months' time, everything fell apart. The marriage was falling apart for a while, but everything else just kind of
went, it accelerated.
Okay. It's like, oh, all right. So, Dad, I tried to go your route. You know, he was a tool and die maker for General Motors in 38 years, retired. Rheumatoid arthritis, he had to retire. So I said, Dad, I tried it your way to the best of my ability. And he was like, well, I don't know. Dad, trust me, you know, you don't, you know internally whether you gave your best or not. And I could look in the mirror and knowing that I'd given my best. It didn't work. So it's like, okay, I tried it this way. It didn't work. I gave myself 100% to it. Because you can't really know unless you do.
Right.
There's no half-hearted engagements.
No. You're either there or you're not there.
Right. So, and this was, you know, right around my 30-year mark. So to have that release, and then it's like, okay, and my choice was, okay, what am I going to do? Well, I got to follow my heart, and I have to do it no matter what, because I already had my marching orders from a teenager, right? Is what I'm here to do is help facilitate a new world order, harmony among people and planet. Well, what was I doing? I was feeding a disharmony in the work that I was doing, the relationship that I had, and the church that saw me as a threat. So in your process, I know for me, I just kind of like, oh, okay. And it took a few years to adjust and just be by myself and fall into those places that were growth points where the, you know, you experiences that take you to a next level or give you further insight and wisdom based on the experience you've just had, and then an additional interpretation of it that you may not be aware of until those thoughts filter in. It's like, okay, you might want to take a look at this. What are the kinds of things that came through when you had, well, you might want to take a look at this? What are the kinds of things that first came up that may have, you know, definitely resonated and yet also may have like, interesting.
When I got sober at 27 is when my ability started coming back to me full force. Because part of my reason for using as a child was the paradigm, right? The paradox, the huge gap. So when I got sober, there was nothing to block that channel anymore.
Right.
So the things that started coming back were my gifts and my abilities, and I had no comprehension of what they even were. I had no idea what it was. So things that were falling into my lap were short-term guides like Sherpas to kind of get me to the next step. And what the thing that helped me the most was being open and a desire to understand myself. We're back to the same concept. Understand. You'll see the underlying thing here is
it's always back to, okay, right? Know thyself, right?
Right. It always is. And it was, I kept externally chasing to try and fit in the current systems. But then I would get kicked in the face and have to go back to inside again. So getting sober, guiding others to get sober, doing all these different things, they were all great. It was all fun. I left the stock market and never went back to it again after that, after I got sober. So it was reinventing myself and learning to start to trust myself. And then also going through this spiritual, I don't want to call it an awakening because that happened many times already by that point. Awareness, I would say. More of an awareness and self-awareness. I always say that the first step of self-awareness is dirty. Because when you first move into self-awareness,
because you see yourself honestly.
Right. You see all the BS that you've been telling yourself for all these years, right? And you don't know what to do with it yet because the first step is self-awareness. So you can either deny it and run, or you can step up and face yourself. Mm-hmm. Now, there were moments of running, and then there was moments of facing myself. And just because I wasn't using anymore, I would open serial businesses. I would womanize. I would go to strip clubs. I would go. I would gamble. I would do all these different things to fill voids. And it wasn't until, I mean, So I got sober in June of 2006. It wasn't until June of 18 when I finally chose me and I left my ex-wife and kids. And then it wasn't until I went to go fight for my kids. The first time I chose me was June of 2018. The first time in my life I chose me. And that was the beginning of me working on myself.
Cool.
Then it was 2020 when I started fighting for my kids that I did all the emotional deep work at a rapid pace. Because like you said, I went into this elevated, escalated growth path, right? Or whatever you want to call it, right? Timeline jump, all these different labels that we could use. But I went into this escalated growth period and I worked with 40 to 50 coaches, 7 shamans, a priest, a rabbi, over the course of 2 years and absorbed everything from everyone. I went through 50, 60 books. I did all these different things to just heal and work on myself and then figure out what worked best for me. And then I helped coaches create coaching programs, get corporate contracts. And then it was so like there's just been this wave of you're here to create. And it was always creating for others under their name because I didn't believe I was worth shit. Like I always say the story, I spent the first 40 years.
I know that feeling.
I spent the first 40 years of my life despising myself, right? And then for the first time in August of 2020, I said, I love me. First time I've ever said it. Then by August of 2021, I said, I'm in love with myself. Blind all my flaws, loving, you know, being this toxic positivity idiot, moving into that space because none of it matters, right? Just stay positive. It's all fine. And then after the stroke, I moved into unconditional self-love, which is embracing everything.
Right.
Being the multifaceted being one whole complete entity and loving even my scars, even my wounds, even my weaknesses. I love it all. It's the most beautiful experience ever. And I went from self-aware, which is that dirty, dirty feeling, to now I'm in compassionate self-awareness. So it's shifting the whole mindset over to transition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the book that I put out in December and the process, which don't buy the book if you don't want to do work. It's a waste of your money. If you are looking for a way to grow and heal and shift your life, then go ahead and buy the book.
How many have books on their shelves or in their walls or on their computers that, you know, they get but they never open?
Right. Don't waste your money on my book. If you don't want to shift, if you don't want to evolve, if you don't want to grow, do not waste your money. Because if you read it,
That there is, and as we know, you know, consciousness is permeable, right? So that information that you have, you can still glean what's in the book if you sleep with it. Because that energy is there. Now, that may sound far-fetched. I've done it over and over again. I've read a lot as well. However, what's fun to do is sleep with the book for a while and
try
then
other ways.
And then read it and see what all you already know about it, which gives you a reference point. It's like, okay, this is because you didn't know anything about it to begin with. And yet, so there's all kinds of ways of testing truth. We've got to be willing to do that. How did you, now, in your process, and you know, at that point in your life, but in my life, same period, I worked for an aerospace company. I was in charge of $7 million in shipments a month of commercial spare parts. I excelled. I was at the top of the department, 35-person department, in my on-time deliveries and meeting monthly goals. And I got ostracized because I suggested having interpersonal skills classes in the department.
Right.
And that was the beginning of the end. Because I openly said, we're not operating at peak. And the majority of the people heard that in a judgmental way, that I was judging them, not my point at all.
But they heard it from their perspective. That's how people receive information, is from their perspective.
So
you were trying to help them evolve, and they heard it from their perspective that were less than.
I was just looking at it from a company perspective. Hey, we work together better. High frames, right? On-time deliveries get better. And because I was able to do that, they put me on military spares, which is where I just had a real issue with that. But we were 28% delinquent. And the DOD had taken away $1 million a month progress payment. Well, they stuck me in as the lead guy on the team to take care of that. And within a year, I had it down less than 10%. And at the same time, right after that, is when I brought a consultant in to show his wares about interpersonal skills development. 3 weeks after that, I was demoted. So it was like, oh my gosh, you know. And my divorce was final the same week. Smack, smack, boom.
Right? Quite a turning point.
Yeah.
It's one of those turning points that you couldn't have orchestrated so perfectly if you wanted to.
Absolutely not. And right. Being in it at the time, oh man, it was excruciating. And hence is where I get my term excruciatingly fun.
Right? I call the journey tragically beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
I call it tragically
beautiful.
You begin
to recognize these growth patterns and the cycles and the rhythms of them. You begin to become aware. How do you notice the beginnings of, and you mentioned the traumatic events and you know, the chaos, the all that kind of stuff to begin with. But what's next from that? How do you step out? What kind of questions are you asking of yourself that assists in that moving beyond the excruciating to the fun part? And being willing to go through that because you now recognize the process.
I mean, everyone is unique, right? Every pain point is unique. So I don't believe there's one way. It's a lot of it is journaling. A lot of it is paying attention to what's going on around me and being in an objective space, living my life fully, being present in the moment, but through objective reflection on a daily basis, I'm able to identify what is going on and what patterns are starting to form what patterns I'm leaving, what patterns I'm in. So it's a step-by-step process. I mean, I meditate, I do energy work, I journal every day. Every day. I don't, and then there's creative expression every day. Today it's this.
Back to the discipline, right?
It's right. Well, something it's a way of life. It's a way of life. I mean, I don't like habits, I don't like rituals, I don't like routines, but I love my way of life. Because for me, it's just a non-negotiable.
It's yours.
It's the same thing. Right. It's the same thing. But for me, it's not as rigid because it's just how I live. Like if I'm 10 minutes late to do my meditation, I'm okay. If I sleep an extra hour and my kids are a little bit late that morning, it's okay. It's all okay. I removed a lot of those external pressures.
Now, what do you find with people who have unspoken, unfulfilled expectations that you become aware of in process? How do you address those? Because that's really where a lot of the conflict comes.
Are you talking about how they deal with me and how it impacts me personally or their personal life on their journey?
Both. Because you're able to understand, okay, this is coming up now. I recognize this. And so I'm going to have to shift or just be who you are in that, right? Sometimes we have to shift it's like, okay, I'm over here now, but now I got to be over here in order to do this, right? So again, what are the perspectives of that from yourself and how you interact with others and bring them into?
If we're focused on my life, let's just take it one step at a time.
Sure.
I don't care what anybody's expectations of me are. I just don't. I'm very transparent. I live the way I live. I express what I'm going to do. I fulfill based on my word. Everything is done. Is it in the order, in the time frame, exactly as they want it? That's not my problem. If it wasn't expressly communicated to me, that's not my problem.
Okay.
Because I can't live for somebody else's expectations. I refuse to be in that space anymore. Now, are there societal expectations and norms? Electric gets paid, water gets paid, rent gets paid, basically mostly on time, most of the time. Not always, but most of the time. Those things, yeah, I live into that space, but I don't pressure myself with that within it because I know what the result is. We're human beings. It will create stress. It will take me out of flow. It will put me into a space where I'm rejecting everything. I'm not open. Right. Grace to see disease. So when dealing with somebody else or guiding somebody or working with them, so there's two different paradigms here. If I am working with them and coaching them, guiding them on their journey in their life, I sit down with them in an objective way, explain to them exercises, explain to them the patterns and routines and behaviors that I'm noticing, and then I give them exercises so that they can notice it for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I don't always give them the answer first, but I give them the tools to find their own answers.
Right.
Because for me, nothing is permanent. I want to coach.
We have to learn on our own. You know, it's like the words, the teachers, all that really doesn't matter. The insight and wisdom comes from your own experience and the inquiry that you have of self in the process.
So what I do is I tend to work with people for 3 to 6 months, show them and guide them to all the tools available, and then allow them to go live their life without me because I'm not meant to be in anybody's life permanently.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to be a coach for someone permanently. There's 8.1 billion people. I can't cover that in my whole lifetime, no matter how many people I did it once. So there's always new opportunities. So I release them just as much as I bring them on. Now, if it's somebody interpersonal within my life space, a family, friend, whatever it may be, potential partner, but that's not even really an option at this point either. I don't have time or energy for that. But so when it's somebody that I'm not working with in that capacity, but I observe how they're functioning within their patterns and behaviors. If they are open, I will ask, are you open to understanding your situation or do you just want to vent? Because people don't know that there's an option, right? Everybody just goes
oftentimes that's
vent,
true.
Right? People just go vent. They don't always know that there's an option. So I always ask. For me, it's always, do I have permission to share with you what I am observing about your chaos?
Mm-hmm.
Because if I see your chaos, I feel your chaos. How the hell does it feel inside of it?
Do you want to inhale or exhale?
Right. Exactly. But I've learned to ask. I used to just offer it straight up. But the more gentle I become with myself and compassionate, self-awareness.
It's like offering a teenager, answers to questions you know they have, but they haven't asked yet.
100%. I don't do it with my kids either anymore. I let them ask. And if they don't ask, I just assume they know. Even my six-year-old. When I'm off, my six-year-old would look at me and say, Dad, go journal. Dad, go meditate. Dad, go write a self-forgiveness letter.
That's an interesting perspective. You assume they know as opposed to assuming they don't know. Mm-hmm. Now, imagine, gosh.
I believe in them.
And the belief factor is huge when you open yourself up. That's not a constraining thought whatsoever.
No.
You're not judging. You're not being critical.
Limitlessness.
Limiting.
Right. So it's limitlessness is what I stand into. Yeah. And I share that horizon with them every day. Mm-hmm. My daughter says, Dad, I don't want to. I said, baby, it's cold today. You don't want to wear a jacket? And she said, no. I said, okay, let's go outside. Went outside, no jacket. It's 0 degrees with wind chill. She's not going to die. She's just going to be freezing her butt off. And she came back inside within 3 minutes and she's like, Dad, my hands are cold. I need the hand warmer. And I got her a hand warmer and we got her jacket on. Yeah. But it's not my job to tell her what she needs. If she doesn't learn these skills, she's going to be spending the rest of her life going to college, moving out of the house, whatever it is. Dad, it's cold. Do I need a jacket today? Like, I mean, how many kids call their parents for that crap? Because parents want to enable them and protect them and put bubbles around them. I want my kids to learn at 6 years old.
As adults even, how often do we ask for things? We make assumptions. We usually answer our own questions with how we're
100%.
Thinking and then wonder why we're still not getting it, right? We don't know how to ask questions, shut up, right? And let life, like one of my favorite writers, Rainer Maria Rilke, says, ask the question and just let life answer it.
I'll always give you the answer.
Yeah.
I'll always give you the open answer.
And willing to do so.
Impatient.
And somewhat vulnerable, I suppose. Yeah.
Impatient, because without patience, nothing happens.
Oh, yeah. You probably heard these, the five Ps, right? Patience, perseverance, persistence, passion, and purpose. And I say there's a sixth, because without the sixth, none of them apply. And that's practice.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you've got to.
That's huge. That's a huge part of life that most people miss.
So in that practice, let's say, what kinds of things are you finding are some of the better questions to ask of self and others? Because we're similar questions, right? As we are moving into this next phase of redirection, coming out of COVID and reestablishing relationships to ourselves, to life, to our work, to others?
There isn't one answer to that. There's 8.1 individual.
This is important. If we don't know the questions to ask, how can we ask them? And the only way we can know those is to look for others who've been down this road and figure out what were the questions that you asked that helped.
Treat each individual situation individually, listen to your intuition, and follow what is being shared with you. There is no one way to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's not the simplicity that we're looking for based on this conversation. And that doesn't help the world at a grand scale.
Well, are there the life being simple, and we both agree that to be true, right? It's just it's a little complex. In that simplicity, there are some basic questions to ask when you enter any situation. What might those be for you?
What impact can I make? What relative, relatable experiences can I pull from? Where can I show empathy and understanding? That is how I approach every situation. Now, individual, when dealing with other people, those are the questions I ask myself.
Yeah, your feedback with the questions are going to be different with every individual.
Right. So now when I'm dealing with others, a lot of it is, why are you here? Why are you in this situation? Not like here physically, but why are you in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
And from their answer, you'll see if they're stuck in the trauma triangle, if they're living in victimhood, if they're, you know, just self-aware, if they're not self-aware, if they're just starting their journey and beating their shit out of themselves. Like, you'll see all these different trends based on the words that come out of their mouth and how they speak. You know, but it's more of, I'm trying to think, generalized questions. You know, when I'm dealing with any individual, it's really, what do you believe in? What do you believe? Because that's their truth. What they believe is true. We are what we believe.
Well, so now for yourself, though, I mean, one of the questions that I have is, how may I serve?
Well, that's my impact question. That's where I ask impact rather than serve. I ask about impact.
Yeah, yeah. And those kinds of things, you know, you open yourself up to, okay, how can I participate in this with my best?
I just know that it's always going to be my best. I don't even ask the best part because I know it's always going to be my best. No matter what it is, it's my best. Because I'm not going to do anything other than the best.
Well, so there's a, you know, that, am I enough?
Right.
Is that the imposter syndrome showing up and things? Because that's also part of the process.
100% it is.
We wonder, are we enough? Do we have enough? Do we know enough? Can we serve enough? Are we, you know, loving enough?
We all go through those moments, right? Like, I mean, no matter who we are, like, why am I on this podcast? Should I be, do I deserve to be on this podcast? Why am I here? Why? No, but I mean, relatively, we all ask those questions at moments. The difference is, as we go through the healing journey and as we continue to grow through it, the questions just get a little bit quieter. The self-doubts, the insecurities, the fears get a little bit quieter because you believe in yourself that much more. You live into your purpose and the rest of it starts disappearing around you. You're always going to be where you're meant to be. It wouldn't be where you're meant to be if you weren't there. I mean, you can't.
Yeah, that's it. Again, back to the simple things.
Right.
Like, you're there because you're supposed to be there or you wouldn't be there.
And that's
now,
it.
You're there that you have a choice in.
Yes. How you receive it and how you project it outward. Because it's all projections. And it's all receiving it based on our perception versus there is no objective truth. It really doesn't exist, objective truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's perception is so different. But it's coming to a point to respect and understand that fact. There is no right or wrong. It just is. And understanding and loving ourselves is the way that we can reflect it out to everyone around us. It's all about that reflection.
What do you think people see when they encounter you? Or how do you, what do you think? And I know this is an arbitrary question. It's like, you know, how often do we put ourselves as, you know, how do others appear? Now, agreed, there's a paradox. Doesn't matter what other people think, but how I believe. And it doesn't matter what I think, but how others believe. Right. So there's that Mobius strip kind of activity happening with those two that learn how to synergistically work together by how we respond to that. So what do you think others, when they encountered you, what do you think their perceptions are? What are their internal reflections when they first encounter you?
Of recent times, because I continue to evolve. So I'm not the same person I was a year ago, not the same person I was 2 years ago, nowhere near the same person I was 3 years ago.
Right.
So as I've evolved, I believe I present in a very authentic, truthful way today because I live in my authenticity fully, wholly, solely. I don't water myself down anymore. I don't ever be just part of me. I am a fully embodied, multifaceted being that I'm always everything at once. I'm everything and nothing all at the same time. So dealing with me is very different than most people because I just fully embody myself and live in my authenticity. It's not always what people want to receive. It's not always what people want to be around. And lots of people come and go real quick. Lots of people try to pull closer. Lots of people do all different things based on where they're at in their journey. Because we're only going to receive where we're at within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
How I perceive you versus how somebody else perceives you versus how anyone else perceives you is completely different from each other. Now, there can be some line of similarity.
There's a unifying factor in there somewhere, right?
Right. But again, it's all subjective purpose and subjective truth and subjective perspectives.
Experience. How could it not be?
Right. So, I mean, the most
There's
recent
data.
Times it's really, yeah. But most recent times it's truly authenticity and standing in my truth and probably the absence of fear, because I traditionally don't have many fears anymore. I don't see a point to certain things. Like, I have no interest in skydiving. What's the point? I remember when the planet was created, I remember seeing it all, so I don't need to see it that way again. Right, yeah. Like, I mean,
climbing, all that kind of, did that when I was younger. Loved the
adrenaline. I have no interest. Yeah. I like deep conversations. You want deep conversation, deeper than you ever had in your life, that's where you come to me for.
Yeah, cool.
You want understanding, you want to understand how to understand, you want to grow deeper, you want to evolve, you want to have these etherical, spiritual conversations that are so deep and so foreign to society, and you don't know where else to go for them, that's when you come to me.
And in coming to you, as I have, this is, I really enjoy these deep conversations because they are rare, and I'm hoping that they will become more commonplace as we continue our evolution process.
Over time.
Well, I think we both realize that to be true because of the ripple effect that we're aware of and our understanding of science and quantum physics and consciousness and how that works and all those kinds of things that would take hours and hours to kind of go into a deep dive and explain situations and give examples and, you know, and opportunities to explore for the others that on their own. Speaking of opportunities to explore, what would you suggest one might do to explore this new living awareness within themselves of being less fear-based, let's say, because that's kind of where most folks are starting right now. They're afraid of tomorrow. I think maybe they're afraid of today, right?
They're afraid of every moment, right? And it's understandable based on what's out there. So it's very convoluted. It's very dopamine hitting, serotonin drinking, all these different things are ripping out of us, because when you're avoiding, you'll find the escapisms, and all the escapisms are there and more readily available than ever.
Cortisol just goes, you know, skyrocket.
Right. So interesting. I really believe that there's infinite ways and limitless ways to get there. First thing you need to do is understand how you receive information. You know, understand your love languages, understand how you communicate love, understand how you can love yourself. Like, I mean, because if I didn't learn that I was audiological, I would have never went through all those books. I would have never received all that information because I could have read all day and not comprehended it the same way. Mm-hmm. But it took me years to understand that I was audiological. So if I didn't know that as its key factor, I would have never gotten to where I am today.
Sure.
None of the shift would have happened. So you need to understand those little components of yourself. How do you receive
it? How do we do that?
Right.
Then I'm going to offer some things already. For instance, on my website, on bethedream.com, I have a section of self-help references. And these are links to all the different kinds of surveys. Myers-Briggs, DISC, Colby, astrological charts, numerological charts, all of those different kinds. And there's others there too.
Right.
Kinds of things that, when we're authentic in answering, we get a better reflection of ourselves.
100%.
And that may change over time, too.
Always does.
Those tools are available, and you don't have
try
to
try it all.
Others. Yeah, try them all.
Try it all. Absorb as many pieces as you can, and Frankenstein the best way for you. I mean, that's really what I look at it as, right? Like, I mean, it was learning from the 40 to 50 coaches.
Except we're not so monsterish once we're done.
Well, I mean, and there are phases after where
all,
feel it.
You know, he did it. Do, what was it, the Ritz routine. I'm thinking of Young Frankenstein, right? When he got up and danced and did that whole song and dance routine. So that's what we're headed for, is a song and dance. We're playing our song. We're dancing our dance.
When we embrace ourselves. It's when we embrace ourselves and start loving ourselves. You know, love the flaws, love the weaknesses, love every aspect, love the worst things that we've ever done. We're not judged on the worst thing that we've ever done, usually.
Well, it's self-judgment. Right.
We do.
In your near-death experiences, let me ask you, because I know in mine, in that place, there's no, when you're gone, there's no judgment.
Oh, no. None of that stuff exists. It doesn't matter. It's all gone. It's all released.
Why do we have these false belief systems that we need to judge ourselves?
It's a mind. It's the veil between our higher power and ourselves. And it's the eternal struggle. It's the paradoxical struggle between the human experience versus the spiritual reality.
Here's and a paradox that, for you. As after I had my first OBE or my spiritual awakening at 18, I was compelled to go to the university library and look up the word Satan. Because, you know, this was like, okay, first thing you think when you go into the light, as where I was brought up, Bible Belt, Indiana, right?
Okay.
You go into that kind of, oh, that beware. Satan can appear as the angel of light. And, well, you know, Lucifer was called a light bringer, right? What did he bring? He learned how to condense into form so the rest of us could. Now, with that word, though, with Satan, the very first, now this is the two-volume dictionary, right? That's like 3 or 4 inches thick, each volume. So I look it up. The very first reference was from the Greek, Satan, Thetan. What's it mean? Thinker. I was like, wow, I could have had a V8. No. That kind of thing, right? There it is. And yet in all the other dictionaries, I would venture to say it's not there. So the guys that put everything together created a fictitious enemy and said, oh, and spoke with a lisp. Oh, Satan, you silly fool, right? So those kinds of things, when you seek for answers, they will be available. The trick is to accept what you find and not want to argue with it.
I think also part of it is to understand that you're receiving it from your perspective, right? And when I went through my journey, I went through the phase of I know best, I know what's right for everyone. And the reality
is that's the argument, right?
Right. Nobody does. So there's not one way, there's infinite ways. Just learn from the pieces from everywhere. Look at it all.
The thing you can know is what's best for you.
Right. There is no authority figure. You are your own authority figure. There is no, you can't, we have, as a society, we have to stop making false idols. There is no follow the leader. We are all leaders of our own journey. But that's the issue. We want to give others that leadership role and give power away and then turn around and have someone to blame and shame because we don't want to be accountable to ourselves.
Sure.
Right?
Given that hierarchical perspective and that most businesses right now are alpha male-led silos that are in competition with everybody else, there's no understanding of collaboration, let alone oneness, right? That's
foreign.
Yeah.
Even women that are running it are living in their masculine energy, so they're doing the same thing.
Well,
it's all about the masculine or feminine energies.
No, and we came from a matriarchal system and then entered a patriarchal era, the Piscean, and now we're getting ready to go into a balanced state, which is the Aquarian Age, or so it seems. Now, in the advent of, you know, this understanding and navigation through all of these things, do you see the transformation of the hierarchical structures into more chaotic ones, kind of like DeHaak did with Visa in its initial inception? There was a flat line management. There was no hierarchy. There was no leadership. It was like, okay, here's what we need to do. Have at it. Of course, the skill sets to do so were there, right? But there was no other structure other than the ability to collaborate. Do you
think
moving towards that?
I think on value that we bring to an organization, 100% yes. As far as roles and responsibilities, I still don't see that yet. I think we are at least two generations removed from that still. But well, as far as valuing the janitor versus the CEO, I think many people could tell you today that I know that I need a janitor, because I don't want garbage piling up on my floor. Not really sure what the hell the CEO does for the 25, 30 million a year. So, I mean, I feel like that balance is starting to straighten out a little bit more. And when somebody starts understanding the scope of the CEO overall balancing all the different facets of the business out, it doesn't become an egoic stance of running an organization. It becomes balancing the different flows and alchemizing the processes across the board.
The term for that today is called servant leadership.
Yeah, I don't like that label, but yes, I agree. I don't enjoy that label.
Yeah, well, I got a better one. Because we need labels.
Right? I don't think we do.
How do we encompass this and be able to talk about it succinctly? We don't necessarily need acronyms, because those get really confusing. Right?
But here's the thing. Even servant leader can mean 10 different things to 10 different people. So it's we all have our own perspectives. So even that's the problem with these labels. They're not being redefined based on who's using them. And if you don't take the time to understand yourself, then you don't understand your perspective of why the label doesn't apply. But then if you don't take the time to understand somebody else, you don't understand why it does apply for them.
Sure. Well,
this is the lack of understanding. Because if we don't take the time to understand ourselves, we're not going to take our time to understand anybody else. Sure. And that is the issue that I have with labels, because they're recklessly used.
Yeah, and you and I both have had labels stuck on us throughout life.
100%.
None of them, you know, it's like, why do you do that? And yet it's the nature of humanity or human beings to categorize and label.
And bulk up and simplify. You
know. Yeah.
I get it. I just don't like it. I also don't like better, worse, right or wrong. I want to be better today, 1% better every day. So our minds slant negative. So if you're telling yourself you want to be 1% better every day, then your automatic mind goes to, I was worse yesterday, worse the day before, worse the day before.
Measurement.
Because your mind's always, right. So it's always slanting to the negative. And that's how you're programming your mind to validate things. So it's one of those things where I don't like using those labels anymore, those words. That's why it's just a growing forward daily. No matter what it is, I learn, I evolve, and I grow. It's just an experience. Don't take it so damn personally. It's only 85 years, 100 years. Even if it's 120, who cares? You're not even a speck of dust on the timeline. Been around for 4.5 billion years. What do you think 150 is? What do you think 250 is?
Enjoy your time here.
That's it.
Oh, you can expand it. There is evidence. Byard Spaulding took a group of scientists to the Southeast Asia in the 20s to research these guys that were supposedly 600-800 years old, and there were written documentations that you know, validate.
I don't want to be that one. Oh,
can you imagine the
no,
wow. I mean, to me, that would in some ways, I mean, we hear stories of vampires, you know, living 500 years,
right.
Stuff, but and yet being able to just experience this wonderment of how evolution is taking place. Now, that is a particular perspective to have as opposed to, I'm just so tired of this, I'm going to get out of here, right?
I just figure I'll be back 5 times in that time period. What do I need to stay for the whole time for? Give me a break in between.
What if you were able to take your body with you after that and not have to worry about it? And there is evidence that that's possible too.
I think I'd much rather get a new body starting from scratch. I did a lot of damage to this one. I mean, I can heal it myself. Don't get me wrong. And I have, but it's not the same. Give me one with a little less work, a little bit less road rage on it. It's definitely got some road rage on this one.
No doubt. Well, speaking of road rage, we're not going to be raging. However, we do got to get on the road. And I really appreciate this time and how we've navigated through this wonderful conversation. Is there anything that you would like to say as a parting gift?
Find unconditional self-love, find compassionate self-awareness, and grow forward every day. That's it.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wonderful to be with you, and I look forward to catching up later.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it also. Thank
Namaste
you.
Namaste and in La Ketch. And thank you for sticking with us for this episode of One World. I'm Zen Benefiel, your host, and I will see you next time.